Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Well, good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I am Eddie Mayfield and we're glad you're here. Here on Driven to Business, we like to talk about a variety of topics that deal with businesses, both large and small, although to be honest, our orientation is probably more towards small and mid-sized businesses, mainly because that's where my expertise is. As a rule, here on Driven to Business, we have guests in the studio with various backgrounds, and we enjoy interviewing them and talking to them. But today in the studio, it's just our producer, Joy Winsler, and myself. Hi, Joy.
Always a pleasure to be here, Eddie.
Joy does a great job of keeping up with what we do here, keeping things timed up, keeping it all recorded, doing the podcast for us and all that, and I very much appreciate his help. What Joy and I are going to talk about today is the subject of marketing. Now, that may be a boring subject if you just hear it right off, but I'll tell you what, we're going to probably be very helpful to your business. We're going to talk about marketing and the way it actually can help you in your business. And not only that, at the end of it, I'm going to give you some hints about websites that I think you'll find interesting. And this is, I'm not in the website design business. I'm a user of websites. Our company does a significant amount of business from our websites, so it's very important to us. And incidentally, Joey, this morning, I actually got a call. Our website, of all things, doing this program today, our website went down this morning. And the guy that maintains our website is in France. His name is Olivier, and he does a great job. And it turns out that works out pretty well for us because of his of the time shifting of the European time and our time. I can send him an email at night or early in the morning, and he's still up. And then he oftentimes will work on things while I'm asleep at night, and I get up the next morning and it's all fixed. Although he took care of this immediately this morning, and we're back on the web. Joy, you know, I try not to make Driven to Business an infomercial for our business, EMA. But, you know, it is my primary experience, so I have a hard time not talking about it, particularly where marketing is concerned. Let's talk a minute about, let's just to put this in perspective for most people, let's talk about marketing for a moment in terms of the computer business, because that's a fascinating thing to think about. Joe, now you're a lot younger than me. Where did you see your first computer? What was it like?
My first real experience with a computer was playing Oregon Trail in elementary school. So mainly it was for entertainment purposes and calculations on a small scale, addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division.
Well, this is going to tell my age. The first personal computer I ever saw, or a PC, I don't think we even called it a PC back then, was a Commodore 64. After I got out of the Coast Guard, I was working at a television station over in Birmingham, and a guy that we knew brought it in, and he showed it to us. And you had to take this thing to make it to see it. You actually had to hook this to the back of a television set, and you would look at Channel 4. And that was what you saw. That was the monitor of the computer. The computer had no hard drive. It had 64K of memory. That's where the term Commodore 64 came from.
That's not much memory.
No, and not at all. And there was no hard drive in there. You had you used a 7.5-inch floppy.
Okay.
That's what you had. And you booted off that, and then you ran it. And he was showing us all these things about it. And he had a couple of games on there, and he had a we weren't tied to a printer or anything, but he had, you know, he could type things on there. But we're all looking at it. And I kept asking him, but what's it for? And then he would say things like, well, your wife, and this is really, computers were sold on this, your wife can put her recipes on here. And I would have went, why would she want to do that? I mean, so we have to hook it to the TV to look at recipes. And those kind of inane, it was very cumbersome. It really had no real function for people. But those things sold like hotcakes. They caught on and sold. And that tells us a lot about how marketing and how tipping points work with equipment. We sometimes buy things and want things that we don't really have any reason to have. We just want them. And although we like to think we're not all little kids, in a way we are like little kids in a candy store, and we just see things and we want them. I remember reading a long time ago, Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft, wrote a book called The Way Ahead. And this was before the term internet was in wide usage at all. He used a term, he called it the information superhighway. That's not a term you hear these days. You would sometimes hear people talk about the, later on you heard people talk about the World Wide Web. It was a long time before the word internet became common vernacular. In fact, www in front of addresses stands for World Wide Web. That's what that's all about. And in the beginning of that, keep in mind, there were no search engines. So I can remember working with a guy one time. One of my friends is still an engineer at Channel 2 here in town. And he helped me find something I needed for something we were doing at church. And he found it in a library in France online. And I had no idea you could even do that. And yet he found it just because he knew to go. You would go and look at these libraries and look for things. There was no search engines. Now think of the internet for a moment with no search engines.
Wow.
And how useless that actually is. Bill Gates always said that the internet and the computer would take off. Again, he called it the information superhighway. He kept saying there's going to be a killer app, and he had several suggestions as to what that might be, but he missed it. The killer app for the information superhighway, now what we now term the internet, was email. No one anticipated that. And again, when I grew up, we had never heard of email, so obviously we didn't think we needed it. But, Joey, I remember when my mom got an email address, and I was thinking that if my mom is an AOL address, if my mom is on email, well, then everybody is going to be on email.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. Both of my parents are pretty much computer illiterate. As a matter of fact, I was speaking to my dad a few weeks back, and we were talking about Google. And he mentioned to me that nothing comes up when you go to Google. And I said, Dad, you have to put something into the search bar and press enter. Oh, makes sense.
That's actually, but you know, I was going to talk about that when we talk about webs, because Google, you know, everybody spends a lot of time making their websites all these beautiful pictures and da 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 da. But arguably, the most successful website in the history of the internet is Google. And what do you see on Google when you go there?
A couple changing things, but not often. I mean, it's basically just the word Google. Sometimes they use different colors. Today they have a Martin Luther King thing going on. But for the most part, you're right. It's just the word Google and a search.
Very, very simple site. They're a single-purpose site. And when you come there to Google, you're coming there to use a search engine, and there it is.
Right.
And here's your search engine. Type your word in there and go for it. Let's talk about marketing just overall in a minute. I like this quote. Joy, it says, if you think marketing doesn't work, consider the millions of Americans that now think yogurt tastes good. Think about that a minute. I mean, when I don't recall the word yogurt being around when I was a kid. We used to call milk like that clabber, and we threw that out.
Yeah, it's like rotten milk.
It's rotten milk. Yeah. We didn't drink that. We didn't eat that. But somehow or another, that's become part of vernacular. And again, that's a marketing job. That is marketing. And the thing about marketing is that it affects us in ways we don't know we're being affected. We're going to talk in a moment about the toothpaste story, which is a fascinating look at that. But let's just talk about what marketing is for a moment. People try to differentiate between marketing and sales. And without going too deep into this, the simple thing to say is marketing is information. Information is marketing. And think about this for a minute. Let's say, for instance, if you were running an air conditioned service company down the street from my house, and I had my air conditioner goes out here in the hot Atlanta summertime, and I need some help. But you know, you may be down there, you may have a truck ready to roll, and you're great at it, and you're ready to do it. But if I don't know you're there,
then I'm not there.
Then I can't use you.
Exactly.
And so that's the role of marketing, is to make sure I do know you're there.
Right.
It doesn't sell me particularly, but you let me know that it's there, and it's information. And that is a huge part. And for those of you that are trying to get more business for your companies, don't overlook that simple fact. Think of this for a moment. How many of whatever business you're doing, and you could you know, whatever business you're in, whatever product you sell or service you sell or provide or whatever it is that you do, think for a minute of how many people there are that would use you if they just knew you were there. Just think about that a minute. How many would use you if they knew you were there? And you can kind of, or how many, or you can maybe do it a little differently and say, how many are out there in the universe? You know, at our company, EMA, we did this the other day. One of the companies that we do service for just sold their 1 millionth piece of equipment. And so we were asking, how many of those people would use us? This is very high-power esoteric equipment that we do a really good job working on. And we really don't have much problems landing customers if they know where, if they know we work on it. Well, we started running some numbers on that and saying, okay, there's 1 million of these out there running. What percentage of those people would use us if they just knew about us? And I had some of my guys saying everywhere from 50%, you know, which is that's 500,000 people and new customers. Well, that's pretty good. But, you know, I took a more conservative approach to it. I said, what if only 0.5% of 1%? It's still 5,000 people. That's a lot of customers.
Yeah.
How many people out there don't want 5,000 customers? So I was trying to inspire people. Part of our job is to get our name out in front of these people. Marketing is information. Information is marketing. You don't have to do much more than that. Just get it out there, what you do. And as we go on in the program today, we will talk about ways to do that, some direct and some indirect ways. So stick around today. We're going to be talking about ways to do this. We're going to be talking about ways to improve your business. By the way, we are streaming live on biz1190.com. We will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. I am your host, Eddie Mayfield. You're listening to Driven to Business. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on WAFS Biz 1190 AM, Atlanta's Business Radio, and we're glad you're here. We're talking today, and actually with the studio today, as always, is our producer, Joey Windsor, and we're just talking about marketing and possible ways you can help your business. Joey, one of the things people, I think, get mixed up about is there's a bit of a difference between direct marketing and indirect marketing. And let's talk about that for a second. Let's suppose that you are in a store, it doesn't matter what, and a sales clerk walks up to you or a salesperson walks up to you in the aisle and they say, may I help you? What is your default gut answer?
No, I'm okay.
Yeah. And you know why that is? It's because we all like to buy. No one wants to be sold.
Yeah.
That's just human nature. And anybody marketing better understand that. People like to buy. They do not like being sold. So indirect approaches to marketing are actually much more effective than direct approaches to it. In fact, one of the key success factors I've heard people say of indirect marketing is to appear as if you're not trying to sell anything. Now, we all are. Now, people are not dumb. They know that if they're engaging you in a conversation, you're not their best buddy in the store. If they're talking to you about a football game, most people are not dumb enough to think that you can't, that their job in the store there is to discuss football with you.
Right.
They understand that. But by discussing football with you, and actually it makes it more pleasurable for the salesperson too, what he's doing is he's forming a bit of a relationship with you.
Yep.
And actually, although you can take a very cynical approach to that, the truth of it is you actually like that. You then become more comfortable talking to that guy about what it is, and maybe he can really help you. Maybe you are looking for something. I find myself in a store, and a guy will say, can I help you? And the fact is, I can't find something I'm looking for, and I will still, if I don't catch myself, say, no, thank you. And then I said, well, no, wait. I do. Where are the hammers?
Right. Well, back to what you were discussing earlier. I mean, I think that's so true. For instance, before we moved into our new house in Holly Springs, a gentleman was walking by selling a coupon book. And in addition to purchasing the $15 coupon book, you'd get 90 days of the AJC delivered on Thursdays and Sundays. And at first, I was really skeptical. I thought, you know, I'm not moving in here for another month and a half. I don't really need the paper. I don't need this and that. But he kind of sold me when he started getting me involved in a conversation about football. I was wearing a Philadelphia Eagles t-shirt.
For those who don't know, Joey's a huge Eagles fan. So
diehard Philly everything.
Right.
And so he engaged me, and I knew that it was just so that I could, you know, sign up for this service. But he got me, hook, line, and sinker, and I signed up.
You know, if you've ever read the book, or if you've haven't read it in a long time, the book Huckleberry Finn, you've got Huck and an escaped slave and two con men who claim to be a king and a duke on a raft going down the Mississippi River. And they're stopping at little towns, and these two con men are basically conning the town people by all kinds of methods they're doing. And what they're doing, and there's a place in there where the townspeople realize they've been duped. And what they're running around saying is, sold. We've been sold. Well, that's a pejorative term. People don't like to, you know, when you get a new car, you don't want to go home and tell your buddies, that guy sold me.
Yeah.
You know, no, this is what I wanted, and I got a good deal
and,
on this.
And not only that, but I got a free keychain out of the deal.
Exactly. And I got a good deal. That's the way we all are. Well, the indirect approach is a good way for selling. I heard another person define the indirect approach is being so interesting, funny, useful, or even bizarre that people want to find out more about you. That's kind of a silly way of doing it. Here's a few ways of doing indirect selling. Part of it, honestly, involves adding some value to your customer. That could even mean discussing football with them. It could mean anything. It means adding something of value to them. If you're a big football fan, having a discussion with someone about the game last night, that adds value to you. So there's nothing wrong with that. That's now the person needs to actually know something about football.
Yeah,
it becomes kind of foolish if you're trying to do that.
How about that Joe Montana? Huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Looked really good last night.
That's not going to work to get that pulled off. But you know, some indirect things you can do, and it works for us that we do. And some of you out there with businesses or that either manage or have leadership positions in a business, you can think of this. We hold schools and seminars. Some of them we charge for, some we don't. But by doing that, along those lines, we also do what we call lunch and learns or breakfast and learns. And in our business, that may mean coming in and talking to a company about Powerline Harmonics or some techie nerd thing like that. And here's what we do. Because you've got to be trustworthy in these things. We do not suck someone into a lunch and learn about harmonics and then start selling them our product. That is a good way. You violated people's trust when you do that. You cannot do that. What you've got to do is give them something of value. Give them the knowledge of value. Most of the time, if you do that, you will have earned, in their mind, you will have earned the right to take a minute or two and tell about your product. They'll be glad for you to do that, as long as you didn't try they don't want to feel you took advantage of them or lied to them about what the content. You got to have expertise. We write a lot of business in our company off our website by doing blogs. They're technical blogs on a variety of topics, everything from variable frequency drive particulars to harmonics to applications to all sorts of physics associated with that, to control problems, to energy saving situations, all of that. We do that. That works really well for us. Our website, it just goes without. We write a lot of business, either directly or indirectly, from our website. And our website, what we try to do on our website is the website does do some selling, no question about that. But we also try to have a lot of information on there, downloadable information that people can come to and find it. By the way, I'll just say, since I'm here, our website is emainc.net. That's emainc.net, and that's where we are. We made we did something unusual in our company. We made a funny video a few years ago. We call it Career Day Video. We had a local comedian here, Trip Crosby, put that together for us, and Tyler Stanton, his partner, they put that together for us. It's sort of making fun of technicians. that thing has been hit all over the world. It's just amazing how that's been hit. And again, it there's no selling to it. It's funny, except the very end, it pops up our website, and that's all it does. Well, what that's done is opened up a lot of doors for us because we'll say, hey, take a look at our website. Well, not many people in our business try to be funny. So the fact that we are differentiated, that's, again, you're adding value to people. People like to laugh. They like to see funny things. And particularly if you're dealing with an engineer or a technician, we all sort of make fun of ourselves to some extent, so that works out good. We have a lady up in New York, one of our salespeople up in New York, Rebecca Z, and Rebecca Z has been great success in using LinkedIn to pull in customers. Again, it's an indirect way, but what she does, she doesn't sell to them. She actually does a lot of ads, puts a lot of very useful information about our business on LinkedIn. In fact, on eddiemayfield.com is a podcast of that program. You can go look that up and take a look at it.
I think it's almost impossible to understate the importance of social media these days, whether it be LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. All of those things are free billboards. It's free advertising, and you're pulling people in. People are on Facebook. They're blogging. They're giving honest feedback on your website. And things like Angie's List, I look at those things. I look at Yelp.
Right.
Because reviews from people I don't know that aren't particularly associated with the company that I'm shopping in, those are the ones I trust more than a mission statement on the website itself.
Yeah, because any of us can put that kind of thing. In fact, that's expected, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I always tell all of our folks, you need, as a marketer, you need as best you can to differentiate yourself from the pack and stand out there. When we come back, I want to talk a minute about the difference in trying to market to a mature market and an expanding market and help you with that. And perhaps look at two different, you can decide in your business where you are, and there it will determine a few differences you should do in the way that you market. You are listening to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We'll be back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're here with Joy Winsler, our producer. Joy, the program's kind of flying by today a little faster, and I haven't covered half the stuff I meant to cover. So
that's the beauty of good radio. It flies by.
That's exactly right. It does fly by. I was thinking about something, Joy, in terms of a radio station ads. We've done some radio station ads for an event that I did at church. And those of you that this, you can think of this in terms of your own business and how important, we're going to talk about websites in a moment, and how important a web presence can be. Mm. It's not, for most of us, it's not an end-all, catch-all, but it is it is part of the package. You need to have it there. You know, we were doing, I was helping promote a concert at our church, and we did some ads on your sister station here, the Fish.
Oh, great.
For that. And, you know, when you're doing ads for a concert, you can either say, well, the concert's going to be at, and you can give the location, but and if it's a known location like Fox Theater, okay, well, that's fine. But we're doing a church that probably most people don't know the name of the church. And most people are listening to the radio in their car, or at least a lot of them are. And they can't write things down because they're driving their car. So you've got to be careful about that.
Or you hope they're not writing things down while
right,
driving their
exactly,
car.
Exactly, unless you're driving with them. So what I did before we ran the ads, I went to a lot of trouble to be sure that if you Googled so-and-so concert, Stone Mountain, we were the first, second, third, fourth, fifth listing on Google. We were there. I'll talk a little later on about how to do that. But I made sure of that first. And what we did in the ads then, what we would say is, we would talk in the ads and we would say, Google, so-and-so concert, Stone Mountain, Georgia. Well, people can remember that.
Oh, yeah.
If they're interested in the concert. And we had a lot of attendees come from that. But that's better than, and we did give a phone number as well. But that's a lot better than giving a phone number and address and things that people are not going to remember. Well, you can just say, okay, Google, da-da-da. And you see a lot of ads like that these days. Mm-hmm. Of course, the prerequisite of that is that you better make sure you've got a Google presence if you're going to do that. And that's an important thing. But that's just part of it. I had promised before the break we're going to talk a little bit about expanding and mature markets. Let me just say this. an expanding market. There are some around, and some of you may be in expanding businesses. The ones I can think of right now in the oil and gas business, there are expanding businesses in that. And expanding businesses means, an expanding market means that the market is expanding faster than the number of people that are offering services and equipment to it, so that basically in an expanding business, sometimes you can get away with just hanging out your shingle, and by being there, you will get business. I've heard Andy Stanley here in Atlanta say that if you have the only hot dog stand in town, your hot dogs don't have to be that good. Most of us, however, in business do not have the only hot dog stand in town. Most of us are in mature or maturing markets, and all that doesn't mean a mature market is not a bad market. Some of the biggest markets in the country are very mature markets, and there's millions and billions of dollars made by businesses in those markets, but they're mature. What it means is that the market is not expanding, and to get business, you have to take it from a competitor.
Yeah, you have to offer sauerkraut, hot relish, and pickles.
Exactly. There are other hot dog stands, and you got to have a better hot dog. Or order to offer something different that they're meet some niche in that market they're not meeting. And that's the point of and most of us are there. In a mature market, you have to actively go after business. It takes more marketing. In an expanding market, you might get away with not marketing. But the fact of the matter is, most of us do businesses in mature markets, and to not market is probably to go out of business. I mean, you cannot do it. All of us, anyone listening that doesn't know this, if you have a set number of customers, I can assure you, you will have customer attrition. Some of it may be something you do. Some of it may be that the people you were dealing with retire. They go out of business. Their business changes, or the technology changes. All sorts of things can change, but you will lose them, and you've got to be continually finding new business out there. Again, keeping in mind that people like to buy, they don't like being sold. One of the more interesting stories of marketing that I know about is a story of Pepsodent toothpaste. So you and I, you read this article as well, Joy.
I did. It was fascinating.
For those that don't know, there's a book called The Power of Habit. It's a great book, but you can also find this online if you just look at several things. Back in the early 1900s, an American businessman, an ad man named Claude Hopkins, was approached to advertise a new toothpaste product called Pepsodent. Now, it's hard to believe this, but prior to the early 1900s, most Americans did not brush their teeth. Now, we have a hard time believing that now because that is a habit. You probably don't know anyone that doesn't brush their teeth.
Well, I'd say based on the coffee you have, you're probably smelling my breath right now. I just had some Chick-fil-A earlier, so...
No, I've had a cough I cannot get rid of, and I don't know why. I actually like Chick-fil-A. So.
Well, it's fascinating that half the people didn't brush their teeth. I can't imagine being in a social setting such as the workplace and having raunchy, rancid breath. It's just, ugh, it's gross.
But anyway, Hopkins, who helped change that, it was marketing. What Hopkins did, he started off reading a bunch of dental books. He was trying to come up with some dental reasons to do this. And what he found out, he said it was so dry, it just didn't have any pizzazz to it. But in there somewhere, he read about it over a period of time, there's a film that forms on your teeth. Mm-hmm. So here's what he came up with. He said, look, this was his big ad. Run your tongue across your teeth and feel that film on there. That means your teeth are nasty. And Pepsodent, this new toothpaste, will get that film off there and give you a beautiful smile. And if you can feel that film on your teeth, then your teeth are yellowing and ugly. And if you don't feel that film after brushing with, you won't feel that film after brushing with Pepsodent, and you will have beautiful teeth.
And the film was the cue.
Yeah. And it took off.
Yep.
It took off. They began running out of product. And it ran great. And people developed the habit in the United States, a very ingrained habit of brushing their teeth. But that's not the whole story. It goes back to the indirect marketing. Later, other people making toothpaste were trying to figure out how in the world this guy, because they're trying to do the same thing. Well, it wasn't just the beauty. Now, he thought he was indirectly selling, instead of clean teeth, he was selling beauty. So he was trying an indirect sales thing there as well. But it was even more indirect than Hopkins knew, because later on, they began to find out that Pepsodent actually added some citric acid and other things in almost by accident in their toothpaste that had nothing to do with cleaning your teeth, nothing. But it left a tingling sensation in your mouth after you spit the toothpaste out.
Yeah, feel the burn.
And that was what people began to associate with clean teeth, and still do to this very day.
Absolutely.
All toothpaste has that in it.
Not to mention the mouthwash. I mean, if I don't feel the burn on my tongue, I don't feel as if it's really doing its job.
Exactly. Which all goes back to the marketing point of, well, there's 2 points. I always look at Zig Ziglar. No one stumbles across anything sitting down. Well, these guys stumbled across something and didn't even know they had. And it also brings up another truth of marketing, and that is, it makes some people angry, but it's a fact. We often don't know why we buy a product.
This is true.
And here's the deal. If you're asked why you buy it, you will make something up.
Well, yeah, because we don't want to appear foolish.
Exactly. Why did you buy that car? Oh, da-da-da-da-da-da. But when you examine the logic of it, well, this car does not have more room than the other car. Well, this car is not faster than the other car. Well, this car does not have as good a safety record. Well, you paid more for it than... you bought it because it was red, but you don't want to say that. You don't want to tell your wife that. You know, so you come home with some other story. But that's an amazing thing about marketing and why we do what we do. Let me tell you a personal story inside our company, something that we did. Many years ago, we were sitting around and we were trying to come up in our company with ways to increase our business. And we asked the paradigm question. It is a great question for any organization to ask. What we said was, what is impossible to do today, but if we could do it, it would have a significant impact on our business. And so we brainstormed that around a bit. And what we came up, this was back in the days when our primary business was doing shop repairs in shop. We're more field service now, but we were doing a lot of shop repairs. And we came up with the idea that one of the biggest complaints we had was turnaround time. It took sometimes a long time to turn things around. And we said, you know, if we could do a 48-hour turnaround on shop repairs, we would own the market. People would love that. But that's impossible to do for a variety of reasons. It takes longer than 48 hours to get a lot of parts. We don't have expertise on everything we get. We have to kind of, it takes us longer than that to repair it. Sometimes your technicians are, you just don't have the technicians to do it. I mean, you got other work stacked up. There are plenty of reasons that was just impossible to do a 48-hour turnaround. But we kept digging. And what we came up with is, while we couldn't do all repairs in 48 hours, there were some repairs we could do in 48 hours. There were some equipment that we always had parts for, we had a lot of expertise in, and we could actually repair very quickly. And it also turned out those were our most profitable repairs as we began to look at this. And so we began advertising our Fast Track program, the fastest drive repair in the country. It was a huge success, but here was the surprise of it, and here was the indirect thing that we didn't know about. We picked up a lot of business from Fast Track. But most of it was not in the Fast Track business. What we found was that by advertising that we do 48-hour turnaround on specific equipment, that we got more business from equipment that was not Fast Track. It turns out that the customer base out there just liked the idea that we said that.
Right.
Even though we would explain to them, we weren't trying to cheat anybody. We would explain to them, your equipment does not follow. That's okay. That's fine. It's kind of like a joy. It's like the one-hour cleaning, you know, when you see the signs, one-hour cleaning. Yeah. Who really needs our cleaning in 1 hour?
Yeah. I mean, well, it's because you're valuing a customer's most valued asset, which is their time.
Right.
That's it.
And I think it's also, people don't like doing business with deadbeats. It feels like you've got a company that says we can do your cleaning in 1 hour. Well, they must be pretty organized.
Right.
I mean, they must be pretty good.
Yeah.
If they can do that. A repair company that says we can turn our stuff around in 48 hours, or we will actually pay you a discount. We will give you money off that repair, and we back that up. Well, they like that. And I think that's, again, the idea of just thinking. I would encourage anyone out there in business, when you're thinking about marketing yourself, is to stop and ask that question. What is impossible to do right now? But if it were possible, it would have a huge impact in our business, and then find out, then push a little further. Okay, what part of it is impossible? What part of it is possible? Maybe it's not all impossible. Work on that. That's our Fast Track story, which is a great thing within our company. You are listening to Driven to Business, streaming live on biz1190.com. Stick around. Welcome back to the final segment of this week's Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're here with producer Joey Winsler. Joey, I'd like to spend a few minutes talking this last segment here about and help people out perhaps with design and implementation of a website. And perhaps they can look at their website and see what to do with it. Joey, our small business, we do a significant amount of money off of our website. In fact, it is probably our, there's no question about it, there's no probably to it. It is our largest salesperson. That's not the right way to say that. It is our most effective salesperson. It's one of these things, again, that people think about. And, you know, here's something that we had talked earlier about this. If you look at the most, probably the most effective website on that there is Google. And Joey and I had already talked about the fact that the Google site is very simple. Now, it may be. Now, Google is a single-purpose thing. They've got their search engine. Your business probably can't be quite as simple as Google's. But you should make it as simple as you can make it and do that. And when people are getting ready to design a website, I always tell them, Joy, to sit down, and it doesn't matter who you're having do this. Most people cannot design their own website. I got that. But before you get a designer, you need to take a piece of paper and sit down, and you don't have to be artistic or anything else, but draw down or at least list out what do you want that website to do. If you can't answer that question, don't start with a website.
Well, nobody's going to hang up a mirror without making the proper measurements.
Right.
You know, you need to know what you want. You need to know more than that. You need to know what your customers want and how willing they are to dig for it. I found that when I searched the www. I always like things to be simple. I like it on the homepage. I like a feedback section. You know, it just provides that sense of security that, hey, you know what I want. Because of that, I'm going to do business with you.
And what you don't want to do is annoy people that visit your website. And you know, have information in there. Either have so much information on your site that you cannot figure out where anything is.
Right.
By the way, one way to get around that is to have, you should put your own site search on the website. That's one way to do that, so that people can search within your site. And that's really handy to do that. The other thing is I tell people, choose function over beauty. Now, I'm not knocking graphic designers or any of those kind of people. If your website is this gorgeous work of art that nobody can figure out a thing of what to do on it, you are wasting your money on the website. It needs to be, you would be better off having four buttons in the middle of the page that told people where to go on your website, because that's what people come there for. And, you know, you're a fairly young guy. You know, web behavior, people get annoyed.
Oh, yeah.
Fast. You don't get long on you. If you go to a site, you're searching for something, it pops up in Google, you go there, you don't stay very long on that site if it's not there.
If I can't find it in 10 or 15 seconds, I'm moving on to
exactly.
The second.
Exactly. That's right. And people, some of the research says people will not go more than two clicks.
That's true.
Looking for something. Now, it may change if you're looking, like in our case, if you've got somebody looking for a particular electronic part or something, they may really, really, really spend time and dig deep in there. But that's not what most people are doing on websites. Let's talk for a moment about search engine optimization, SEO. You know, it does you no good to have a site if no one knows you're there.
Yep.
And they can't find you. And if you think you're going to get away with having cutesy, that fine people find you because you've got a cute website name like www.mexicanrestaurant.com or something, that's not going to work. Nobody's going to do that. People do not type in stuff like that, or very few people do up in the address bar. They go to Google or one of the other search engines and search. So you had better be sure that you can be found on Google or on, and I'm not just, it's not an advertisement for Google, but most searches are done on Google. That's just a fact.
Well, not to mention, just to validate that point, if it's not on the first page on Google, I'm going somewhere else. I don't want to go to the second and third page.
That's a good point. And you certainly are not going past the second or third page.
Oh, no, no.
There's no way.
It's a waste
of time. How much you're hunting it. You know, you got to get there. Now, there are a couple ways to make that happen. Some of you may be aware out there of pay-per-click searches. This is where you go to Google, and at the bottom of Google's website, you'll see a thing that says advertise. You can click on that. They're very helpful. And they're happy to take your money. You can sign up, and you can sign up for what Google calls pay-per-click. And you can put the words in there that you're looking for, like whatever kind of business you're in, dog grooming, whatever. And you can put that there. And when people click on that word, an ad for you will pop up. Now, a lot of people don't click on the ads as much as they will click on what we call organic searches, which are the searches that are not ads. But the ad's better than nothing. And the ad actually, and we get a lot of clicks on ads. As a matter of fact, we do both in our company. But it's also, and by the way, that can be very, very expensive. I've had some terrible experiences with that. When we first started with that years ago, when I first started doing that, you could buy pay-per-click ads for like a penny a click. Well, right now in the business I'm in, it costs about $5 to $10 a click. So if you have got to, you got to think this through. You better make your ad where it's very clear what it is you do, and only people that you really want to talk to attracted to your ad. Otherwise, you will spend a fortune. I was years ago. I had a pay-per-click thing. We had a little Christian band going, and I made a mistake of putting Christian music on there. Well, after about $2,000 in one day, which I caught it, I went, holy moly, because we were a volunteer band. This doesn't work. So you got to be very careful about that when you go there. And now Google does help you with that, as do Yahoo, as do Bing, as do all these people. You can put a budget in there, a daily budget, and say, you know, I'm not going to go above, and you can work that out. But pay-per-click ads are one thing. You also need to deal with organic searches. Organic, Google and the other search engines, let me just tell you this, they like text. They don't care about pictures. And you got to be very careful. A long time ago, you could just put a bunch of words on your website, and you'd get found. But all of the search engines have figured this out. You're not going to fool the search engines. You need your website needs to be about what you actually are about. Don't be trying to get people to your site. But if you're in a business and you're writing you need to write blogs. Blogs are such a good way to get search engines to your site. And figure out what keywords that really people looking for you are going to find. Think about it a minute. When you go to Google, Joey, and you type in a search word, what do you want to happen? I mean, what do you want to pop up there?
Exactly what I need.
What you're looking for. Yeah. You're looking for something. And you know, that's what Google wants too. Google is trying to put what you're looking for. They want you to be happy too. They want it to be what you're looking for pop up there. Think about if you're a business and people are looking for what you do, you need Google is very happy to put you there once they figure out you really are what they're looking for. The trick is to make sure Google knows you're what they're looking for. Blogs and so forth are one way to do that. And here's another example about websites. So write blogs and put the words in there. Be very careful how you write it and put the words that actually apply to what you do in there, so that if someone were searching, those words in the context of what you say would come up. Don't play any games with Google. Don't just repeat words 88 times. They'll figure that out, and you'll be punished for it.
On a funny side note, if you go to yahoo.com and just type in the words how to, the third or fourth option will say how to make chloroform. And I thought that was ridiculous. Who's really asking to learn how to make chloroform on Yahoo?
Somebody must be. I don't know. Here's another little trick. Joy, you can attest to this. If you go on a site that you haven't been on before and you see something completely outdated on that site, like our year-end sale, and it's way past the year-end here.
Right.
That tells the people looking there that you are not paying attention to your site. They will leave your site instantly. Don't pull stuff like that.
Yeah, you're buying spoiled milk.
And keep it simple, 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 simple. Make it as complex as it needs to be, but as simple as it possibly can be. Make your site clean and deal with people that know how to do that. Watch the search engines. And I'll tell you another thing you can also get. There's all kind of ways to get some free listings. If you're a restaurant, you can go to Yelp. You can go to American Towns and Homes, all sorts of things like that. In fact, one way to find things like that is to Google what you do, see who pops up, and see if any of them are free sites. If they are, go there and put yourself there. You've been listening to Driven to Business. Great show today, Joey. Thanks for being part of it.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll see you guys again next week. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Goodbye.